to another exciting episode of the Blue Line Brothers. I'm Fred.
I'm Frank.
And together, we are a couple of knuckle draggers here to provide you a pantheon. I like that word.
That's a pretty good one.
I just came up with that out of my rear end.
For this time of the night, that's a pretty good one.
And being a knuckle dragger.
I know.
This is great. This is a great way to start off this new year that's going to go to hell.
Did you fall down and hit your head or something?
I think I need to. Oh. I really do. That's yeah. Cool. Maybe I can improve just a little more if I hit my head. Maybe? Maybe. All right.
Maybe.
All right. Excuse me. Now, what we're going to do is get into the meat and potatoes of what we really want to get this channel into. All right. And starting off this second season, we're going to delve into this this whole subject of challenge. Seeing as how we have a number of things that might be falling us here later in the year, perhaps, maybe a couple months. Maybe it might be in a decade. But I have a funny feeling that probably just a little bit sooner than later, we as a collective whole might be facing quite a bit of challenge.
Yeah.
Just a wee bit, maybe.
Yeah.
Well, what we're going to do is get into a couple of personal stories. We have to regale you somehow. So we also deeply appreciate, by the way, listening. You're still with us, those who of you who are still with us, I should say. All both of you. thank you very much. For your support.
And I think it's just one person they listen in two different areas.
Maybe that's it. Yeah. Well, we do have an international audience, technically. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to exemplify my German skills by asking those Sprechen Sie Deutsch. That's the cumulative sum of, let's see here, 2 years of junior high school or high school German and another year in college. And that's about all I remember.
I only know bad words, so I'm just going to leave it at that.
Okay. Well, maybe we get into the bad words here a little bit later. But thank you all. No matter where you might reside, thank you very much for your support. And, of course, we are going to challenge ourselves to entertain you as best we can.
Yeah. This year has been kind of hit or miss. It's been a lot of unforeseen things that have reared its ugly head. And yeah.
Yeah, I think we've been in that spot. So actually that's where we're going to get into with this episode. So each one of us we've got a story that we'd like to share that gets into some of the finer points of dealing with challenge, some major league challenge, and also how a superior mindset with a little bit of vision might actually help get through some really tough times. And obviously we've all been through a great deal of tough times of late, and like I said before, unfortunately it really looks like we're going to be in for some maybe even more challenging times here in the future. So with that said, Frank, how about you kick things off and tell us about a certain motorcycle crash that happened a few years back?
Well, see, it was summertime, and I was literally the equivalency of a block away from the house, and I was going around the curve, and this pesky cat came out, and yeah, when you're in the apex of a curve, you really can't do anything. I hit it, and I went down. I was folded up underneath and then sucked up even further underneath the bike. my whole right side of my face was gone. I actually had a hole in the side of my face where you could kind of poke my cheekbone. I shattered my tibial plateau, ended up getting oh, what was it, nine screws and a plate that's it's about 8 inches long. Still in my leg now. Road rash all over my right shoulder, my arm, my hand. I was a pretty good mess. The funny part is, when I went to the emergency room, the doctor said, yeah, your leg's broke. And I said, okay, we'll just put a cast on it because I got to go back to work. He goes, no, you don't understand. He pulled out the x-rays and said, do you see that little triangle piece that's kind of floating off that looks like a piece of pizza? And I was like, uh-huh. He said, that is supposed to be here and attached. It's broken. I was like, okay, put a cast on it so I can go back to work. He goes, no, it's surgery broken. So, yeah, I,
Now, how many surgeries total were you facing?
If the first one wasn't successful, they had a series that I was going to have to go through. The tibial plateau, which for those that don't know, is imagine your knee. You have the top part of your knee and the bottom part, and then your patella or your kneecap is in the middle. Well, the bottom part is what they call the tibial plateau, and mine was shattered. And they weren't quite sure exactly how the first go-around was going to be as far as holding everything together and how it was going to affect me in the long run. But the 3.5-inch screws, there was four of them holding my plateau together right now. Luckily, it worked. There was a lot of talks. It was going to be a series of surgeries if this didn't work. They had talked about a powder mixture made out of cadaver bones to pack the cracks and everything. It was quite interesting, some of the things that they could come up with, but luckily.
So they got your leg pretty much put back together with one surgery then?
Yeah.
Okay. Excuse me. What about these other injuries?
Well, my face, for example, they had to take a brush and quote-unquote sterile water and hold me down and scrape and get all the pebbles and rocks and things out of my face and my shoulder and the back of my hand. That was probably worse than anything because they don't really numb you up too well.
They can't do that, can they? Mm-hmm.
They're like, well, we're going to give you a little something for the pain, but it just, it, there was...
Nothing could probably touch that type of pain.
I mean, imagine your face looks like hamburger anyways, and then they've got you in a modified headlock taking a nylon brush and just going on something that's already raw.
Exactly.
Yeah, but I will say there is a certain point when your mind kicks in and the pain is no longer an issue because you're right on the verge of passing out. And that's usually when they stop and to quote unquote clean out the brush and then everything comes back and you're like, my face hurts. Oh, we're not done yet. So yeah, you're just constantly going through this cycle. But yeah, it was was pretty bad. But the after surgery was even worse because from my my hip all the way down to essentially my ankle was one size. It was the size of my thigh all the way down. There was just, there was that much swelling. The where they had to cut me open, they had to go in there and three different times they had to go in there and pull the staples out just so the swelling had somewhere to go. Then they would close it back up. It was pretty interesting.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure you enjoyed that part.
Well, I am kind of a sadistic kind of fool, but yeah, I mean, it was kind of interesting.
So, you were in the hospital for how long?
I was actually in the hospital for 4 days.
That's it. They covered everything, got you all fixed up, your leg and everything in 4 days.
4 days, there was the day it happened, I was in a holding pattern, and then the next day I went into surgery, and then there was a quote-unquote day to recover, and then it was around noon on the fourth day, they kicked me out, and I went home.
And how long were you home before you could actually start feeling like you again?
Well, that's been a few years ago, and I still don't feel like me.
I understand that. Yeah, that's a good point.
Well,
and of course that's one of the points we're going to be covering and you know, facing a challenge like
so this. The doc basically said, listen, you know, you're going to be out of commission for probably 8 to 12 months. And I politely looked at him and said, bullshit. 3 months later, I was back at work.
Yeah, I remember. It was only a few months from what I can remember. I mean, it, like you said, it's been a few years ago.
Once I got home, the swelling started to go down. Well, they gave me this really cool little chiro cuff. Self-contained, it's your ice and water, it's got a pump, but this cuff went from just below my hip to right above my ankle, and it would pump water through it, but it would also it would have pressure. So essentially what it was doing, it was pushing all the swelling towards my hip, so that way my lymph nodes and everything else would pick it up, and then it would leave, you know, like through my kidneys. And you have to understand, I'm not the brightest person in the world. They said, only do that for 20 minutes at a time. Well, I would leave it on for like 2 hours at a time. they said, okay, I was supposed to be in a wheelchair for 6 weeks. About a week into it, I was already up walking around I used two canes to get up and hobble around. I'm not the brightest person in the world, but, you know.
Well, you're pretty excited to get up and going and get over with this stuff.
I mean, I actually got yelled at by the doctor. So, you know, I went in for my 3-month checkup, and he came in, and I was sitting on the little table they have in there. He walked in, he looked at me, he looked around, he backed out, he looked down the hallway both ways. Came back in and goes, where's your wheelchair? That's a home. Where's your cane? That's a home. How'd you get in here? I walked. show me. So I kind of slithered off the table and I did my best to walk down the hallway, turn around and walk back, walk into the room and do the little one cheek sneak slide up on the table. And I sat there and I looked at him. And he goes, "I suppose you want to go back to work too, don't you?" I went, "Uh-huh. When do you want to go back?" I said, "How about Monday?" "All right, just as long as you know that, you know, this is against my better judgment." I go, "I know. Just sign my paper, please. Thank you very much." Now, looking back on it, should I have waited? Probably. But, you know, it's just, when you have that mindset that, you know, you have to do whatever it is you have to do to provide, then that's what you do. You know, it's that particular thought process, if you take that and apply it to any situation that you have going on, you're going to come out. Maybe not on top, but you're going to come out. Because, I mean, if I would have stuck to their timeline, I would have completely lost my mind.
That's what I was going to ask you. What were you feeling like once you got home? I mean, not necessarily physically, but mentally, what were you going through in your head?
Mentally, I was already thinking of a way to psych myself up to get up off the couch. And, you know, it was a little small thing, like justifying to get up off the couch to go to the bathroom. And, I mean, my house was built in the 60s, so it's not the perfect example of, you know, wheelchair access. So there were times I could only take the wheelchair so far, and then I had to get up to go down the hallway to go to the bathroom. I'm sorry, but, you know, you just kind of have to do what you got to do.
Exactly.
And, you know, did I do a little more damage than what I probably should have? Probably. But, you know, you have to go from here to here to accomplish what you need. Like, I had to go to the bathroom. I got to go from here to here to get that done. And then once I saw that I could accomplish that, well, then, me being me, I was like, well, I wonder if I can get off the couch and hobble into the kitchen. Oh, I can do that. Then I got off the couch and I walked from the den to the kitchen into the living room. Then I went into the bedroom. It just...
Exactly.
It snowballed. And, you know, it's just, I think 3 weeks after I got home, I was, I had worked myself out into my truck and drove down to the bank. I didn't need anything. I just drove down to the bank because I could. You know, I mean, I pulled in the driveway and I had two of my neighbors, one on each side. They saw me pull in and both of them ran out like, "What the hell are you doing?" I was like, "Well, I just wanted to go to the bank." I'm literally losing my mind sitting in this house doing nothing.
Yep.
It's not the physical pain. It's more of the mental. You can't. Unless you actually experience, you can't put it into words.
Exactly.
You can only sit in one spot for so long before your mind goes numb. It's like, I have to do, you know, I have to do X, Y, and Z because I have all of these responsibilities on my plate, but I can't do anything about it. And then you start, you know, your mind goes 8 different directions, and you're at that point. You either do nothing about it and hope for the best, or you get off your ass and you make something happen. Right or wrong, you make something happen.
But you were actually taking it piecemeal. Just like you were explaining before. Excuse me. I mean, you had your goal in mind, as far as mobility goes. But you knew that you could only do so much, so, you know, at certain times.
Well, a little bit before that. I mean, so I've had 20 different knee surgeries. So the aftermath, or, you know, the pain index and everything else was relatively the same. I mean, anytime you start messing with the knee, you know, you start taking away the load-bearing abilities of it and everything else. So I was kind of, it's kind of old hat to me, but this one was a little more
in depth, you know.
Yeah, you know.
A little more metal involved and screws and things like that.
I mean, it's kind of cool because even now I can take a magnet and make it stick to my leg. But, so I kind of knew how to play the game, but it was just different rules.
But this is on another level.
Yeah, and I took it one thing at a time, one step at a time. And once I accomplished that, then I moved on to the next one, and then the next one, and then the next one, until, like I said, you know, 3 months later, I'm back at work, and everybody looked at me like, "What the hell is wrong with you?" Like our mutual car two here.
Mm-hmm.
He literally, when I walked through the door, he literally looked at me and goes, do you have superpowers or something? What are you talking about? Because my whole right side of my face was just hamburger.
Exactly.
By the time I came back, I had one spot on my cheek where it had gone to bone, and it was maybe the size of my thumbnail. Everything else was healed.
I remember seeing you. Now, by the time I saw you, you'd been back about a week and a half, 2 weeks, something like that. So a little more time had passed since I actually got to see you, switching shifts and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. And I was told a different version of a story. So they kind of left out the juicy parts of that story. So I didn't realize to what extent that you were really injured.
Well, see, and that's just it. A lot of there was myself and GW, that he knew the extent of it.
Yeah.
But as far as everybody else, I don't think it was ever put out just exactly how bad it was.
Right, because he's that kind of guy that he just doesn't do that.
Yeah, I mean, even to this day, on my right shoulder, I have a spot that's, well, probably about the size of a softball that is, in comparison to the rest of my skin, snow white.
Oh, yeah.
Just because it was just literally ground away to nothing.
Right.
Like my, around my right eye right here, I have no wrinkles.
You have a wrinkle-free orbital.
If you look on this side...
Yeah, you do look a little bit aged on one side as opposed to the other.
And if you look on this side, yes. there's nothing, because this was literally gone. I have there's a divot right here on my cheekbone. That's where it actually got down into, and yeah, it was...
You know, come to think of it, Frank, taking a look at you, you know, after you pointed these things out, your right side of your face looks 20 years younger than your left.
Well, you know, everybody has a good side.
Well, you didn't even need oil of Olay.
No.
You just needed to grind your face down to hamburger and let it regrow.
I'm telling you that should be the new thing.
But is that not the secret to the Fountain of Youth?
Yeah.
You just have to go through some road rash every once in a
while. Now, if we could just
20 years or
convince
something.
People to let us rub their face across the concrete.
At a high rate of speed, on a very hot day, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? That could work. There's plenty of concrete out there.
Oh, yeah.
Not like there's a shortage. I mean, something to think about, I guess.
Yeah.
Also, if you haven't figured out yet, you know, another attribute, if you will, of going through a severe challenge like this is being able to think outside of the proverbial box.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you pretty much have to. Because when I left that hospital, I was, for all intent and purpose, on my own. There was not one person that was going to come check me on me from the doctor's office or the hospital or anything else. They were just like, here's your pain meds, here's your walking papers, and I'll see you in a month. That's it.
Yeah, they do a great job with that.
So you literally have to, you know, pull your pants up and say, all right, here we go. I can either follow their snowflake little schedule, or I can throw that in the trash and do what I need to do to accomplish what I need to do.
Well, that's another good point to bring up, is that you know yourself better than others. In that, just like you pointed out before, going through so many knee surgeries and things like that, so you already understood the scope of the recovery that you were facing, or had a very good idea, let's put it that way. Yes, it was on a different level, but at the same time, you knew the steps that you would have to negotiate would be about the same, even though this scenario was on a different level.
The difference between that time and any other surgery I had was there's something about having 8 chunks of metal in your body. You can feel it. It's there. You can't not feel it, and you focus in on it. So it may not really hurt, but in your mind it hurts because it's not natural.
I was going to say you would have to get over the mind games.
Mm-hmm. And what I would do is, you know, when it would hurt, I would just force myself to get up. And when you essentially you have a tree trunk for a leg, and it's kind of funny. So from the side of my calf all the way up to the side of my knee, and then it curled over to come towards the back of my thigh, was where they cut me open, and they just had staples in it. Well, I had so much swelling going on that my skin was starting to crack.
Right.
Starting to split open.
Yes.
Well, as I'm hobbling through the house, each step that I took, when I would put weight on it, it kind of had a little sloshing sound. I'd put weight on it, and there would be what I like to call juice coming out of the incision and running down into my sock. So
seepage.
You know, you look at it and you go, that hurts. That's a legitimate thing. That really hurts. So then you start focusing in on the legitimate pain as opposed to the phantom pain, you know, of the mind games. And
now, how long, speaking of the mind game stage, if we will, about how long did that last for you as far as your that portion of recovery?
I still get it every once in a while. Even to this day, and it's been, 5 years ago?
Yeah, it's been fairly long ago.
5-6 years ago? I still get it every once in a while. It's not to the extent that it was then, but every once in a while I'll get it. You know, it's like, because I have one screw, because it went from the outside in when they screwed it together. But there's one little tip of the screw that you can feel underneath the skin.
Okay.
And it doesn't hurt. And if I don't touch it, it doesn't bother me. But the second that I just happen to run my hand across it or something, the mind kicks in, and it's like, oh, that hurts. Oh, this is, oh, there's a screw in there. Oh, this, that.
Yeah, you wanted to reboot.
Yeah, and, you know, you have to do something to kind of override that thought process. And so it still kicks in every once in a great while.
Now, here's another question. What do you do to put that down in your mind?
Usually what I do is I will, it's just what I do. I'll crack my knuckles. Because that is something that is a legitimate physical act that I'm doing and I'm in control of. And I focus on that, and then I forget about the mind telling me, hey, you know, your knee hurts, when it really doesn't.
So in other words, you're taking your mind off of that particular topic by refocusing it on your knuckles.
Mm-hmm.
And that works within a few minutes, and you're back on track.
Yep. Or if I don't do that, I will literally straighten out my legs until my knees pop.
Well, I'm sure you get quite a pop.
I do.
Holy smokes.
And then once it pops, you know, I focus on, you know, damn, that thing was so loud, and I felt it at the top of my head, and it was that was a pretty good one. And then I literally have totally forgotten that my mind is telling me that my knees hurt.
Right. So you're refocusing your mind, and you're just taking a different approach. You have a couple of different approaches then. So if one fails to work or kick in, then you've got something else within your quiver, so to speak, that you can enable.
I mean, and I can see how people get they get caught up in that mental downfall. You know, it's like, oh, my knee hurts. I got to go back to the doctor. My knee hurts. And then you're literally self-destructing behavior. Instead of progressing, all you're doing is you're just caught in a vicious cycle. It's like, I'm better, no, it hurts. I'm better, it hurts. And then it hurts becomes more prevalent than I'm getting better. So, you know, I can
see. Pretty soon you're regressing instead of progressing.
Yep, I can see how that.
It's very easy to happen. Well, let's get into that a second as this pain management thing. When you are discharged, they give you scripts for medication and pain and all this stuff. How much pain medication did you actually take once you got home?
probably the first couple weeks, I probably took a little more than I should. Because, I ain't gonna lie, that damn thing hurt.
I'm thinking that you were in some pretty god-awful pain.
Yeah.
I mean...
And it was one of those things, like, there was no real position that you could sit in that it didn't hurt.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I've tried sitting up with my foot on a footstool. It didn't work. I tried laying down with my foot elevated on four pillows. And, you know, I've tried just about everything that I could think of, and it did not work. The relief was short-lived. Let's just put it that way.
Right.
So you were constantly trying to move it around. And the only thing that would help was taking the pain medicine. You know, and once again, that's a whole nother animal right there. You know, Big Pharma, I left with, let's just say, triple digits worth of pills in one bottle.
Wow.
And was told, okay, if you need more, just call.
Wow. Now, and what was the, how many, for instance, how many did you have to take in a day?
Prescribed, it was, it was two or three every 4 hours. And, I took that and then some probably the first couple weeks. I'm not gonna lie. And then once I started to get mobile, if you will, you know, then they weren't as prevalent in my daily need. So I was more focused on the long term than, you know, being able, oh, well, you know.
Well, let's put it this way. In the medical world, people talk about staying ahead of the pain, mm-hmm. type of thing. Were you able to do that with those meds the first couple of weeks? I mean, were you able to accomplish the goal, or were you still behind?
No, it didn't. The first, let's just say probably the first, you know, week, they actually did what they were supposed to do. But once your body gets used to that,
right,
then you're taking four or five to do what, you know, two or three was supposed to do.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, that right there is, you know, that's the beginning of how any addiction starts. Right there,
they were giving you the real juicy stuff. Then,
oh, they to start yeah, off with. They, I was getting some good stuff.
So you were really, that's the whole thing, though. You were never, even with the medication, you were never able to actually get ahead of the pain. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you were still, obviously you were in discomfort because you were trying to figure out different ways to position your knee and leg and all this stuff. So,
then I forgot to get the really fun part. I had to take, I think it was either once a day, it started off twice a day and then it went down to once a day, but I had to give myself a shot in the stomach. I can't remember what the medicine was called, but it was to prevent any blood clots.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
I mean, if I wasn't giving myself a shot, I was taking some kind of, you know, opiate or some kind of morphine pill underneath my whatever it was, you know, it's I had every opportunity in just to sit and become a vegetable and be like, I don't want to do it.
Well, and this is what I'm getting at, is that even with all the quote-unquote, I'm using air quotes on a podcast again, but tools that you were given, you know, to deal with things, is still very much of an uphill struggle to recover and get through.
I would not wish that on my worst enemy. Let's just put it that way. And it's, I have to admit, and I have to believe that if it wasn't for the fact that I have had so many different knee surgeries and kind of knew what to expect,
right,
was probably why I was able to, get ahead of it and do what I needed to do without falling into that
rut
trap.
Yeah, exactly.
That, and I'm just not the smartest person and hard-headed, so, you know.
Well, yeah, but the point is, it does take that superior mindset. It takes a little bit of vision to get through, even with the tools, if you will, given for things. What allowed you to prevail, what made it maybe a little bit easier, if you will, as opposed to, I don't know, somebody else without the experience of prior knee surgeries, mm-hmm. and things like that, you were able to utilize that mindset to get you through. And that's why you came through, you know, in 3 months rather than a year, over a year, for recovery and things like that.
That, and I'm just a hard head.
Well, like, that's the other aspect, too. Yeah, exactly. As soon as somebody tells you you cannot do something, what are you going to do? You're going to run out and prove them wrong.
Hold my beer.
Yeah, exactly. Here you go. I'm a true knuckle dragger. Watch this. I can destroy myself and live through it. Here, let me show you. I can do it.
And prove you wrong all at the same time.
Yeah, exactly. So there. yeah. And now what do I have to show for it? What? Absolutely nothing? Oh.
A really cool limp.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. So, what kind of motorcycle were you riding?
You had to rub that one in, didn't you? a really nice Dyna Wide Glide.
Oh, man.
But you know, my next one will be an Electra Glide. You know, the old man bike with the bags and the fairing and everything else. Yeah.
I'm thinking, I've seen some pretty cool trikes.
Nope, can't do it.
I don't know, man. There's been some pretty hardcore bikers that I've seen end up, you know, their quote-unquote retirement bike was a trike. And I'm going to tell you.
Can't do it.
All right.
Can't do it. Mm. Although, I will say there's this little human that I know that she said, and I quote, no, you can't have that because you're just going to wreck it again.
You're just going to wreck it again.
Thanks. I mean, how do you argue with that logic? Because she's probably correct.
Well, I don't know. I mean, if we really want to take a technical look at that logic, we could we could probably poke a few holes in that thought process. But so that's the other aspect of this. So you are wanting to jump on that proverbial horse again. Or is it something that you want to move on to something else or a different challenge? You know, well, maybe snowmobiling or.
I mean, here's the thing. I'm not too scared to get back on it, but if I do, it'll be more of like an enduro or a dirt bike or something along those lines,
right?
Instead of a, you know, 1,200 pound Harley.
There. Yeah.
Because at least if I wreck that, and it rolls over on top of me, and, you know, I would have a better chance of pushing it off of me as opposed to being pinned and sliding and feeling my face grate on the concrete. That was a whole other thing. I was conscious through the whole thing.
Yeah, never blacked out.
No.
Even on the trip to the hospital.
No.
Now, obviously, they kept you conscious for the cleaning process. Did they put you out for anything else?
No. But I did kick a nurse.
You know, you have a nasty habit of kicking medical professionals.
Okay, so let me explain.
You
that.
Do. I mean, I think we need to look into that because I think you might have a few anger management issues here.
So here's the thing. I had finagled my leg into a way that was less painful because this was almost 24 hours after my wreck before I got into surgery. So the swelling had already started to, you know, kick into high gear and everything. So I'm sitting in there and they were coming in. They're like, okay, we're going to take you up to the fourth floor, get your surgery, blah, blah, blah. Okay, no problem. I had a nurse come in and she literally grabbed a hold of my ankle. Now, keep in mind, my leg was, it was bent and kind of laid on its side. So I was kind of on, you know, had my weight on one hip. And she literally grabbed my ankle, pulled it, and turned it to straighten my leg.
Wow.
Now,
if that's not a wake-up call, I don't know what the hell is.
I didn't really do it on purpose. My left foot made contact with the side of her head.
Oh, and, my.
You know, it just is. But there is some comedic value in that because once I got up to the surgery floor, the anesthesiologist and the doctor, they were waiting on me, and the nurse was pushing me up there. She said, just make sure you put him out before you touch his leg. And he goes, oh, you're the one that kicked the nurse. And I was like, do you know about that?
Oh, I'm the one.
He said, oh, yeah. I said, that literally just happened. He said, good news travels. Let's just put it this way. She's not very well liked. And I was like, oh. So does that mean I get like the special treatment? He goes, yes, you get the 5-star treatment. Right on.
He said, knock me out, Doc.
And from that point forward, I really don't remember a whole lot.
Well, that was a good thing. But yeah, you seem to practice your Chuck Norris impersonations every time you go to the hospital.
Though. I forgot the other thing. Not only was the side of my face ground away, but my ear.
Oh, yeah, you pretty much ripped that off the side of your head, didn't you?
My ear, I looked like a puppy dog because it was literally just ripped right in half and it just kind of hung down there. They had to kind of
stitch her back up.
Throw a few stitches in there just to kind of keep it into place. That was another one of the surgeries, the reconstruction type of thing. But they did a decent job. I mean, there's still a spot right here you can see where they kind of cobbled it together. And
yeah, but it's by no means a cauliflower ear or anything like that. No. I mean, you'd have to look for it to know that something happened.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I know it's there, so I'm always focused in on it. But yeah, it was a pretty good one.
So after this. You've grown, obviously, from having gone through an experience like this. I mean, from the actual accident, the surgery, recovery, you're back at work.
Yeah.
You've learned things about yourself mentally as far as dealing with the mental issues of...
Yeah, and I think that if it wasn't for the fact that I had the forethought to focus on the future, if you will, you know, what's going to happen after I get out of this, what I got to do to get through this in order to make it to that point, I probably would have been stuck in the quagmire and just...
Still trying to get yourself off of pills and stuff like that and all that.
Because the... I want to say they mean well, but I really honestly don't believe that they do. I think they give you enough rope to hang yourself so that they can vilify you and say, well, you're an addict. You're addicted. Well, gee, I wonder why.
Right.
You know, it's like, oh, here's your 500 pills. Have fun.
Well, once they say that you're addicted, then they just stop the pill. And what are you going to do? They don't do anything to help correct the issue.
They take no responsibility for the problem that they create. Period.
Yeah, that's starting to sound familiar, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not just within the medical profession. But,
I mean, here's the thing. You go to any hospital in this large municipality that we're in, and you go in. Normally, they're going to give you a finite amount of pills. So you have to take them as prescribed. And then it's like, oh, okay, well, you ended that. Now you can go in and you can get round two. So they keep you on a short leash. But where I was at, it was like, okay, here's your pickle jar full of pills. If you need more, let me know.
We've got another pickle jar here in the closet for you.
Yeah, exactly. And it's weird. It, you know, they give you all the tools to, you know, build your own death machine and, you know, then say it's your fault.
Hey, it's great that you have a built-in scapegoat.
Yeah.
The patient is your scapegoat.
Mm-hmm.
So why not?
So it's...
And then, of course, what are you going to turn to when they just shut off the flow of the pills?
Well, the only place you can go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's why we have a whole lot of men and women out here that have to go to the street script store.
Yep.
Because it's cheaper than the scripts from the hospital, and it's the only way to try to manage.
Well, it's cheaper.
It's already loose.
It's a little more potent than what you get at the store at the hospital. Yes,
exactly. Exactly.
I mean, you literally have opened Pandora's box.
Right. Now, here's another question. You admittedly took maybe a couple extra here and there the first couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Was there anything specific that you did to either wean yourself off or just cold turkey, or how did you do it? Well, I mean, knowing that you had that thought in your head that, hey, I don't want to get addicted to these things.
And here's the weird conundrum. I don't really have an addictive personality. I will take it when it's there, and when it's gone, I don't worry about it. So I took them, they were gone, and it was over.
End of story.
Yeah. You know, it's just...
You never asked for more? You didn't have it? No. What, any cravings? Any?
No, that's just nothing. It.
Okay.
Mm-mm. None. It's... like I would go back for, you know, checkups and everything else, and they would ask me, you know, how are you doing on this pain pill? How are you doing on that pain pill? You know, do you need a refill for this? Do you need a refill for that? And I'm like, no, I'm good. I'm good. I don't need it. Because by that time, you know, I'm already, unbeknownst to them, up and moving around.
Right.
And I was more focused on that.
Right, which is the the more potent medicine, actually.
Yeah.
Is that you want to be mobile as quickly as possible.
Once you get that adrenaline going through and everything else, that right there is more of a high than pills.
Exactly.
Plus, you take enough of those pills, and the side effects of them are more long-lasting than the pill itself.
I was going to say, since you're not accustomed to taking pain medication, you probably had a higher realization, if you will, on some of the negative aspects, you know, if side effects, stuff like that, even through your pain and recovery.
And then on top of that, I mean, the ones that they gave me were, so here's your most common ones. Yeah, then you got morphine over here. I was taking ones up here.
That's what I was, just by your explanation of things, I figured they were giving you some pretty juicy stuff right off the bat.
I think they started with a D.
Okay, yeah. They skipped the first three or four levels and gave you the juicy stuff right away. So, but once again, I mean, your point is it's a mental focus that you kept with throughout your recovery. I mean, you had a mission, you had a goal, and you set that for yourself, and you were doing whatever you could, you know, piecemeal along the way to get to that goal, to achieve that goal. So in other words, the pill that you were taking did not become part of that goal.
No, and don't get me wrong. There were days that were just shit. I mean, they were the worst day that you could ever imagine times 12. So it's not like everything was all great and easy and hunky-dory. It wasn't like that, you know. There were just as many bad days as there were good days. But, you know, it all depended on how you let those bad days affect your long-term goal. And, you know, your sleep cycle is completely screwed up.
I was going to ask you how much sleep you got the first couple of weeks.
You know, the first couple of weeks, I mean, I would get maybe 20 minutes of sleep here, 20 minutes there, 20 minutes here, you know. Everybody else in the house is asleep. I'm wide awake. And then it's like, damn, I got to pee. I'm sitting, because I was sitting in the den, and I was on the couch. And the wheelchair that I was using at the time was over here. Well, even with me laying on the couch and scooting all the way over to the edge and having a cane to try and hook it, I still couldn't do it. It wouldn't do it. But it all depends on how you come about it, and you have to buckle down and focus on what you need to do. And here I am today.
As sprightly as ever, I might add.
Exactly.
Well, that wraps up. I guess we're going to turn this into a two-parter. So this will wrap up the first part, and we'll be back soon with the second part.
We'll be back.